Welcome to The Art Scene, brought to you each week by UALR Public Radio. I'm Ann Nicholson. As Arkansas Rep's current season is in full swing, today we look back at some of the theatre's great hits. We'll take you back 3 years to the Rep's 40th anniversary. The 2015-16 season saw a quick succession of three one-man shows. This week, we look back at two of those shows. One, a staging of Homer's epic, The Iliad, and another, a more light-hearted take on the life of President Bill Clinton. First, we speak with Bob Paisley, who played the famous Arkansas president in his one-man show, Bill Clinton, Hercules. That's followed by actor Joe Craves, whose interpretation of the Iliad was all too true to life, with some amazing special touches. Here's Bob. Probably the most intriguing aspect of Arkansas Rep's 15-16 season, its 40th, has been the introduction of three one-man shows. Apologies to Rebecca Wells and the Yaya Sisterhood. Very brief, 3 or 4 days or so, run in late winter, early spring, opening the Rep's new annex, Black Box Stage, 518 Main Street, with Joe Graves in An Iliad, and coming up, Bob Paisley in Bill Clinton, Hercules. The aforementioned Yaya Sisterhood was on Rep's main stage, but also brief. Bob Paisley's peripatetic growing years, with a Navy pilot father's 2-year postings, took the family to many places, and Bob's final high school year was in England. Somewhere along the way, theatre became a lifestyle, leading to Little Rock.
Guy Masterson, who's the director and producer of the show, he and I were roommates back in Los Angeles during the late 80s. When we were trying to be movie stars. And anyway, that's how we originally met. And then, I guess 4 or 5 years ago, when he was here visiting in Kansas City, as I was taking him to the airport, he just looked at me and said, you should do a one-man play about Bill Clinton. And I laughed in his face and said, get out of here. But a couple of years later, this playwright, an American woman who's been living in Britain for 15 years now, sought him out about a different play altogether. But it turns out that Rachel Mariner was, in fact, on the president's legal team when he was in office. So he, as a young graduate from Harvard Law, so she had a knowledge of the Clinton administration particularly, and how things worked in Beltway politics. So between her, with her knowledge, and Guy, with his expertise, with working at the Fringe, and me, wrapping it in a bow, we managed to come up with this production, which opened at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2014. We've since taken the show to Northern Ireland. I've toured it to Australia, and now we're on our way to Little Rock.
Yes, and you expressed some concern coming to Little Rock with this particular show, but I don't think you need to be worried. I think everybody will be looking forward to it. But it's interesting to ask you questions about doing something like this. The playwright and your friend sort of played it out together when she was writing it to sort of pick up on the various aspects of his life.
I think she's got a brilliant angle of attack in the show. I mean, we say some very interesting things. A lot of what comes out is from his biography and other books about him. So it's not a lot of it's nothing that you haven't heard before. But just the way that she's put it together is very clever, and we try to be as honest as we can to his story. I think we deliver a pretty good product that way.
So where and how and why is Hercules involved?
The premise of the play is that the great Irish poet Seamus Heaney, who was a good friend of Clinton's during when he helped out with the Northern Ireland peace agreements, and Heaney wrote a play called The Cure at Troy. Now, this play is a retelling of the Greek myth of Odysseus and Philoctetes and the Trojan War. And in this play, at the end of the play that Heaney wrote, Hercules comes in as the deus ex machina, the visit from the gods to make it all make sense. And he comes in, Hercules drops in, points and says, you can do what I tell you to do and everything's going to be great. And that's how the story ends up. So he sees himself having been some of these other characters in this play, Odysseus at times, Philoctetes at times. He wants to see himself as a Herculean figure. Please, listen to me. Do what I'm doing, I tell you to do, and everything's going to be great. So that's the kind of premise that we, how much he aspires to doing good things, if you will.
And so his life has been similar in labors, maybe even more than 12.
Yes, and I think we do touch on a lot of that as well. There's a lot of ground to cover in the president's life.
Yes, and is it done with humor and sympathy, or how did you approach it with so many warring factors?
Well, we all three of us, Guy and Rachel and myself, we're concerned about how the direction that the world is going in. I mean, we're politically astute to varying degrees and various sides of the questions, but we wanted to do something that was important, that got people thinking and considering what was going on. So yes, there is humor. We use humor to I hope great effect. But this is not satire. This is not parody. This is real life, and we're trying to keep it as up to date and as topical as we can keep it. So as the election goes on, yes, that will affect the show as we continue to grow with it.
Well, I had asked you if this was sort of sympathetic or somewhat cruel.
Well, I think you are both. I think we're both in this particular script. Good things happened, and sometimes bad things happened. And the real honor is standing up and taking responsibility for what the problems that we've caused and helped perpetuate. So I think in ways that we look at the president's life with both admiration and with some trepidation as to how, you know, we've got to at least admit defeat sometimes and move on.
So. And Hercules has so many facets to his character. You know, he's one of the great, if not the greatest, of the gods and the best known, and one of the great destroyers of monsters.
Yes. Well, the fact that he's got that ultimate power as his godlike powers, there's a real desire to be able to have that kind of sweeping abilities. We're envious of it.
Yes. And, of course, Hercules has to stay in character, so he cannot be seen or heard to have any particular axe to grind, as you might say.
That's right. I'm not playing favorites, really, here. But I think we've got a very interesting show, and we give it in a fun way. It's about 85 minutes long, and we cover, like I said, we cover a lot of ground. And unfortunately, there's still stuff that we have to leave out because there's just so much to say.
Mm-hmm. So it's a one-man show. So the figurative centerpieces are there. Most of us know aspects of Hercules and aspects of Bill Clinton. And so it's going to be interesting to see if in some way you have during the writing, Rachel's writing of this, what would you call it? Is it not historical play?
I'm going to have to take a pass. I don't know how I would define it that way.
You don't play it for laughs.
No. No, no, no.
But you do play it for understanding and going with a good, any good play, you follow with what happens on stage.
Right. This is a very straightforward piece. I mean, we've written very much just a talk as if what the president would do if he were there to visit and talking about a little bit about his life and his ideas and his concepts and ideas. we are wrapped up in a couple of particular storylines in this. You know, what will become of the president if he is indeed to become the first gentleman? Is it his job then to just simply entertain ambassadors' wives in the next room while the real power discussion is going on somewhere else? Or can he be involved somehow and still, with his great ideas and his drive, be able to contribute to things getting better around the world? Those kinds of questions.
Yes. And you get a lot of questions after the play is over from people wanting to find out just which line you might be putting together.
Well, I think that, you know, we're pretty... The play is really non-political. It is bipartisan in lots of ways. We've tried very hard to not to take too much of a political stand on this. But at the same time, there are some basic tenets of the Democratic Party which come through here sometimes. But we have a storyline about where not only is the world going, but our country going, and his particular life going at the same time. These three parallel questions, and we give an idea of how we can make all three of them better as we leave the theater.
Joe Graves, an actor who has given Arkansas Rep some of its most dramatic and satisfying memories, is in town for An Iliad, one of Rep's three short fills, as I call it. First, last weekend, Rebecca Wells and the Yaya Sisterhood. The second, An Iliad, opened February the 24th in Rep's new annex stage, 518 Main Street, a one-man show, gripping, engrossing, making demands on actor and audience. Where did this come from?
Piece was developed almost 10 years ago, I think, at the Sundance Studio. Pretty well-known regional theater director in America named Lisa Peterson, a Broadway actor named Dennis O'Hare. And they worked on the piece for a year and a half, with the idea being that Lisa was going to direct it and Dennis would play it.
Well, who wrote it?
They did.
Okay.
They wrote it
together. Put together brick by brick.
Yeah.
Between the two.
And so Lisa did a production of it in Seattle in 2010, the first production of it. But the story still wasn't finished, and that was at the Seattle Repertory Theater, and Dennis didn't play the character. Then one of their resident actors did, and it wasn't quite completed yet. So they were going to do it again at Portland Center Stage in Portland, Oregon, and Dennis got a Broadway show and had to drop out. And so Lisa dropped out too and called a friend, a mutual friend of ours. I don't know Lisa or Dennis very well myself, but got a call when I was in China, and Penny and I are old collaborators and long, long-time friends, and she asked me if I would come and do this with her. So we did the second incarnation of it and developed the music that you heard with a guy named Sterling Tinsley, who was there in all the rehearsals doing the soundscape and the music. And so that's how I got involved, and I did about 100 performances of it in Portland, and that was in 2010 in the autumn.
And the reaction has been pretty similar in
most cases. Yeah, it was really, really well received there. And then 3 years ago, I did it at Syracuse Stage in New York, and it was also very well received since then. Since the Portland production, it's been done, though, dozens of times in a lot of different theaters all over.
And what a one-man show that is.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is quite a work out both mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Yeah. Well, it's something that will never, ever not be appropriate.
I think so. I think so, too. And I think one of the things that attracted me so much to it when I initially did it is that this is our oldest extant written story in the West, and it still resonates so strongly. Mm-hmm. It's so beautifully written, of course.
Yeah. But,
this adaptation, I think, makes it a lot more accessible. Some people are a little bit frightened by the idea of. So. As I said, one of the things that is so appealing about it is it is so immediate and engaging and surprisingly easy to follow.
Yeah. Well, you make it so with the emphasis, because that makes a difference, which actually you do in a way that catches, and others when one has to think a bit, you know. Now, is this as demanding as any one-man show you've done?
The most. It is the most demanding. Yeah. When I finish this, I leave here and I go back to China, and I'm there a day and then go on a 40-city tour of another one-man show about Shakespeare, which is also demanding, but it's not as physically exhausting as this show.
Or as wrenchingly appropriately demanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Shakespeare hits all the right notes, but it isn't continuous all the way through.
Right.
And so there's no escaping. We're trapped.
Yes, yes. And the thing, in order to make it resonate as much as it possibly can, the poet, who is the character I play, who is probably maybe Homer, maybe someone who was in the Trojan War and has been sort of consigned by the gods to live forever and to retell this story. Mm-hmm. And it's very painful experience for him, and he really doesn't want to do it. But once he begins it, he's caught up emotionally in it, as hopefully the audiences are, the country.
And so it will grow and grow, probably. But the horror that runs through it to the present day when one reads news of beheadings and dreadful damage done to the psyche, does that affect you, or did it affect you when you started doing it and realizing how right into the 21st century we have come and nothing has been learned?
Very deeply, and it still does every time I do it. And one of the things I was drawn to about it is the poem, The Iliad, and the adaptation, and Iliad, both focus very much on this rage, the rage in particular of Achilles. the Greek warrior who's challenging the Trojan warrior, Hector. And that kind of rage is something that exists in almost all of us in various kinds of incarnations. And pushed far enough, it becomes something like what we see in the wars.
And I've noticed just on things that go wrong with the races here in one city, that it's contagious.
Yeah.
If there are a few people shouting things that you sort of feel about, then the thing gets out of hand.
Very quickly and very easily. But for me, and I think one of the most interesting and engaging to me aspects of this is that all of that starts with the individual. And we think that wars are made by either ideologies, religious confusions, or by politicians making decisions. But actually, there can be no war without what goes on with us individually. And that's the only thing that we have any even minor control over is how we respond to things ourselves. And the poem and the adaptation in Ilya both point to that very profoundly to me.
And as of the individual, there usually is somebody who has some kind of way with language or a charisma that others nearby begin to feel they can support, and then it grows out of hand.
Yeah, very quickly.
And it doesn't take long.
No, it doesn't.
Just a few angry shouts. People look, listen, get half of what is shouted, and catch the half that they think they can respond to.
Yeah.
And it also, Joe, makes you think there has to be something in the anger of blood that has to be avenged.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something in the soil, in the atmosphere that's there all the time.
Yeah, there seems to be. And I mean, one of our general takes on war and this kind of rage that you and I are talking about is that, well, that's a part of human nature. It's always going to be. But I don't really accept that. I think that there... the power to change things will never come about by great ideological or societal or political movements, as good as some of those may be, but only when an individual is willing enough to look at themselves and say, this is what's wrong with me, and there really is no other. We're all interconnected, and I can do something about the way I react, and I can't make great changes, but if I make a change in myself to the best of my ability, something may happen universally as a result of that.
Now, the language with which this particular one-man show is written, was it something that had a lilt to it, a rhythm that got to you very much more quickly than the actual words?
The translation of Homer's poem that they use is Fagel's translation, a relatively new one in the late 90s. And I love that translation. It's very beautiful, the way he captures the rhythm of the dactyl hexameter that it was written in. And so that was very appealing to me, the use of that language. Colloquialisms, idiomatic expression, even slang, contemporary language with that heightened poetic language. Yeah. And so, yes, that was one of the things that really drew me.
Now, what about the actual physical action? Is that one that you devised?
Yes. That's kind of my own take. In some other incarnations of it, I've seen with other really wonderful actors, it's a much more staid and kind of professorial approach almost to the piece. And with the right actor, that's very moving and very good too. But for me, because it deals with war and trying to find a way to express these passions, it just demanded this kind of physicality to express it as fully as I wanted to.
Well, the physicality, as you say, is impressive and comes very carefully planned in your sequence of what you're going to do and where and how. But as I told you after the play, what caught me was that steady, deadly, flat-voiced litany of wars.
Yeah.
And from their beginning that we know of, and no end.
Yeah. A litany list of wars, 5 pages of wars. Nobody's going to want to listen to that. But actually, by the time it appears in the play, as you say, it is for me, too, maybe the most powerful.
That was Joe Graves, an actor who brought the Iliad all too true to life, whose take on the ancient epic delighted theater growers during Arkansas Rep's 2015-16 season. Currently at the Rep, Native Gardens, a comedy of intercultural and intergenerational conflict, runs until May the 5th. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.